Good afternoon, everyone. So how are you? I'm glad to see that you have found your way to our session. My name is Christian Nessa, and today I also have Flemming Rees with me to co-present, and we're going to talk a bit about the service provider cloud, actually. This is an area where we work extensively, where we are designing service provider cloud using the cloud OS technologies. But be aware, if you are an enterprise, I think what we are going to present will still be applicable for you. So no need to run out of the room, okay?
Not yet.
Not yet. So before we begin, I just want to make one thing clear. We have some expectations from you guys. So since joining our session, hopefully you are familiar with the Azure pack. Can we see some hands? Great.
Hey.
This is good.
That's good
this
stuff.
Is good. And how many is actually using it in production?
Awesome.
Cool. The next one, you are obviously aware of the Service Provider Foundation. Is that correct? Can I see some hands? Very good. And last but not least, you know how VMM works. Okay, so is anyone here quite familiar with networking in VMM? You find it comfortable? No hands?
Two. Three.
Two, three hands. Yeah. Okay, so before this session, we actually reached out to the community and say, what do you really want to see from this session? So we will cover the networking part as well. So our session objectives is hopefully that you will understand how multi-tenancy works across layers. We will also learn and teach you how to convert VMM to become this universal fabric controller. Interesting? And we will have a look at the resource provider called VMCloud in the Azure pack, who is basically leveraging the resource provider. So the agenda is quite simple, to say the least. We will do some planning and designing, and then we're going to jump into demo. Does that sound great? Or do you want only slides?
Only planning.
Okay. So we will now share some of our experience from the field. We will cover some topics, and we'll basically raise quite a few questions for you and perhaps us to decide, and things you should be aware of when you go ahead and do these kind of implementations. So before we start with that, let's talk a bit about multi-tenancy. Are you familiar with multi-tenancy within the Cloud OS? A couple of hands. Good. So you come to the right session. Have you seen this slide before? This is a multi-tenant infrastructure as a service cloud architecture. So here I will talk a bit and introduce you to some of the concepts we will deal with through this session. I will start at the bottom where we find the stamps, also called the management stamps. This is something that was introduced by Service Provider Foundation in Service Pack 1 for System Center that we'll talk more about in a bit. But basically, a management stamp contains scale units, such as compute, we have networking, we have storage, and also include management. So in essence, a virtual machine manager infrastructure can be considered as a management stamp. Okay? So we can have one stamp, we can have multiple stamps. So on top of that, we get introduced to the Service Provider Foundation. This, as I said, was brought to us in Service Pack 1. Did any one of you play around with SPF back then? Yeah.
Yeah, Daniel.
So SPF was sort of a way to leverage all the new capabilities that we saw in Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V. We got NIC teaming, we got network virtualization, we got scalability, and all of that. So Service Provider Foundation is a OData REST API that basically exposes the capabilities of System Center so that you can leverage it in a multi-tenant environment. So this is where we will connect and register our management stamps. So please note that in one SPF server, you can have up till 5 management stamps registered.
And about 5,000 VMs per management stamp.
Yeah, 5,000 VMs per management stamp, which is quite interesting because without SPF, VMM support 25,000 VMs. So please note that. That's a good point. So the Service Provider Foundation in Service Pack 1 was brought to us so that service providers could basically create their own self-service portal and use the capabilities of Windows Server Hyper-V and System Center. Now, as a good example of this, as we see now in the R2 release, is the Azure Pack, which basically is the service management API who connects to the REST API in SPF and give us all the goodies in the Azure Pack VM Cloud Resource Provider. So we also have multi-tenancy here, according to the service management API. You, as an administrator, you have access to the admin API, where you configure the resource providers, while leveraging some of the capabilities through the same API, through the tenant API and tenant public API for the tenants. They can consume, manage, and access their resources. Was that clear? Yeah? So now Flemming will talk a bit about some of the cloud considerations.
On the top of it for the service providers, what service do you need to be delivering? We're seeing a lot of service providers starting out with virtual machines and then adding databases and websites later on. So from a design perspective, you need to sort out what service you need to deliver. And the easy one for internal IT departments and hosters is, let's start out with virtual machines. So that's one service to deliver. Do you need to have it on multiple physical locations? So the SLA against the customer, does the customer require uptime even if a site blows up? And that's a little bit back to the stamp design, because if you have multiple stamps, you can have multiple fail zones in regards to the underlying hardware layer. For testing, development, production, the recommendation, at least for now, is yes, you will need multiple environments of everything. Applying patches and fixes to both the Windows and System Center is something that needs to be done carefully and documented and in the right order. So you will, at least for most cases in production, you will require additional environments. Storage is probably the number one cost issue these days. Are you going to use Microsoft Shared Storage? Are you going to use traditional storage for backends? How will you keep the cost down and the complexity down? VM mobility, do you want to be able to take the customer's local VMs and move them to a service provider cloud? And we can do that today with using Hyper-V Replica from the on-site, replicated into the service provider cloud, and then using SMA and PowerShell scripts in the backend to associate the VMs with the tenant on the service provider. Automation, most of the providers today is running a low-cost operation, and we want everything done fast and at exactly the same time and quality each time. So you need to be able to script everything you're doing. If you have to do almost anything by hand, you won't be able to compete with the big three guys out there. So if you don't have the PowerShell and SMA scripts capabilities in-house, give Jacob a call, and he'll come and teach you guys how to do it, or Jeff. Will you be using network virtualization? The traditional hoster today is using VLANs and using MPLS to connect the customer to the network. That usually requires a lot of communication between the networking department and the Hyper-V and the VMware guys. Network virtualization in VGRE will enable the hoster to isolate customers from each other without having to change the underlying IP structure and having to rely on VLANs. VLANs is, as we see it, a big issue on scale. Even why we should have 4,000 in the normal world, we're not seeing a lot of implementations, for example, on HP equipment where you actually only get a few hundred VLANs before you get into trouble.
So just a question for before we proceed. How many of you are using network virtualization today? In production as well?
Perfect. Two.
Two people in this room. And how many would like to actually use that if they understood VMM networking?
What's the blocker you see today? Is it complexity or support from third-party vendors or what? Sorry? Gateway? Yeah.
Okay, that's good feedback.
You didn't say that, did you? That's good feedback?
Yeah.
Disaster recovery. Most hosters today will like to sell disaster recovery as add-on, but the cost on having double compute and double storage is an issue. Doing disaster recovery to Windows Asia is an option we see more and more, and we'll be able to show this in our session tomorrow morning.
Mm.
There is one small issue. If you use NVDRE, you can't use Asia side recovery. Well, you can use it, but the networking stuff won't fail over. So if you replicate the VMs from on-prem to Windows Asia, you will need to reapply IP addresses and policies when they fail over. Yeah, really. Hopefully this will be fixed. The product group is well aware about it. If we have an existing VMM installation, for the hosters, you normally, from what we've seen in production, you can just blow it up and make a new one.
Yeah.
Because it's not highly available, it's not using shared storage, it's not AD integrated. So 9 out of 10 times, it's easier to make a new VMM and follow the practices for making it highly available at the same time. VM roles, will you be able to provide just VMs, or are you going to provide roles also? So the difference today is that a traditional hoster would provide a VM and the customer would install his own application. But VM roles, as we see it, is a value add and will be able to compete with other hosters if you provide the right VM roles. So if a customer goes in and wants to have an Navision server, they'll and provide a domain controller, a file server, a terminal server, and a SQL server. So we can make that as a role and provide that in the portal directly. And that will save time and money for the end users. Yeah. Backup is one of the things we're going to cover tomorrow. But basically, we've seen everything from no backup, single point of failure on hosts, to SANs doing commitment over 2 millisecond latency link. So you need to think backup in your design. Is it something you want to do as a value add? Is it something that is a requirement? Is it something that the tenant or the end user should be able to access? And what technology are you going to use? Are you going to use Veeam or DPM integrating directly to the hypervisor? Or are you going to use a backup of a replica? That will be covered a little bit more detail tomorrow. Monitoring, you need to ensure that the fabric is up and running. Microsoft Operations Manager is a good way of doing that. We have an issue in scaling out if you have multiple stamps, but that can be fixed with having dedicated Operations Manager servers for VMM. And we also have some issues doing insights in the application running in the VMs because you don't have access. But from the Windows Asia Pack portal, we can show most of the matrix for the VMs. And back to automation. If you're doing this on large scale and you want to make money or stay in business, everything needs to be automated. There's no way around it. When Asia Pack came out in the first version, we didn't have remote control, so we could provide a VM, we could provide an RDP connection, But due to the limitations in Windows Server 2012, it wasn't able to do the remote console. So adding the remote console and RDP gateways will ensure that the tenants can connect to the VM, even if it powered it off or made some crazy IP change. And the scale stuff is basically, if you go in single stamp, we can go to the 25,000 VMs, but I don't think you want to do that in one VMM, because if something goes wrong, it really goes wrong. So scale is back to the stamps and stamp design. So keep it in 5 VMMs and 5,000 VMs per stamp. And after that, you need to install a separate SPF environment, a new front end.
So how many here does actually have more than 5,000 VMs today?
Okay. Problem solved.
Problem solved. And what's also important to note here is that all these questions matters. So if you add another VMM stamp, for instance, you also need another operation manager server for the integration. And the same goes for the endpoint for automation and all of that. So you really need to plan your design accordingly. And in the end, you basically end up in VMM and how you do the design there as well.
And one last thing could be that sometimes I know that Microsoft is talking about blast radios on the installation. So if you have one stamp and something goes wrong, you take down the whole stamp. If you have multiple stamps and if something blows up, you can limit the disaster to that one stamp. So that's if a customer has uptime requirements, it could be beneficial to put it in different stamps. You can run into some issues with NVGRE not being able to talk across stamps, so we have to resort to VLANs or PVLANs, but that's a different part.
Yep. So, the scenario we will actually cover in this session is to build a scalable service provider cloud. So, what we will try to do as much as possible is to keep with one management stamp. So our case is to scale VMM across different locations. Is anyone here using VMM across different locations today? Good. So we will turn this VMM stamp into this single universal fabric controller, which means that everything related to Azure Pack, everything related to automation, backup, monitoring, network virtualization will be managed by the single VMM infrastructure. That, of course, we will have a highly available VMM stamp, use NVGRE. We will also show you how you should leverage tenants using VLANs together with Azure Pack. We also have a requirement for high availability and disaster recovery on our management cluster, because we are able to use disaster recovery by using a single management stamp as well.
If we deploy VMM and VMM for some reason isn't up and running, it's usually not a problem. The big problem is that people can't connect to the VMs, but the VMs keep running. As soon as we install NVGRE and use network encapsulation, the VMM provides the address mapping on the Hyper-V host. So if you move VM from one host to another and VMM is down, there's no network connectivity between the two VMs. So as soon as you go to production with NVGRE, you need to ensure that VMM is always up. In the old days, you could just go to cluster manage, you can put a node in maintenance mode, you can move it around and do whatever you wanted to, and everything will still be able to communicate because the networking stack wasn't virtualized. So as soon as you go to NVGRE, you need to ensure that VMM is always up and running. And that usually requires dedicated storage, dedicated management cluster, and you really need to ensure that backup is running and functional. Because if VMM is down, your customers are down.
Another requirement is to offer cloud services across different countries and also provide geo-redundant cloud services. So this is I would say for at least the biggest service providers that we work with, they have these kind of requirements. So we always have the discussion, how many stamps do we need? How should we structure this? And I would say that around 8 of 10 times, we basically use a single VMM stamp, unless you have more than 5,000 VMs or in the near future. So do you have anything?
No, that's what we're seeing also. The complexity in having multiple stamps is often not worth the risk. So what we're seeing in production right now is that people are going for one stamp, unless they go to mega scale, and then they are probably not based in Denmark.
Well, yeah, and we have this dependency of NVGRE. So VMM, once NVGRE is implemented, is the network controller for this as well. So if you have two stamps, those stamps will never be able to communicate. So the tenants in stamp one and stamp two can't communicate. They need the same VMM infrastructure.
We're seeing some deployments where people are using it for web servers, and then they have an external geo-based DNS that will ensure the connection to the NVGRE across the sites. But from an internal networking point of view, everything needs to go through the internet to communicate if you have multiple stamps.
So you ready for some demo? Still awake? Okay. So welcome to my second home. VMM. This is a blank VMM server. That doesn't mean I'm not prepared. I just want to show you how it should be done. So the first thing you do with VMM, you do not add any hosts. VMM, as we will turn this into this universal fabric controller, we need to put some knowledge into VMM. And that goes for host group structure, storage, and networking. So as a tip, the first thing I'll show you, or at least what I'm doing, is go to settings, general, and find the network settings, and disable this one. You agree? Because when you add a host and you have not disabled this one, it will basically create a logical network for you automatically with a most likely a ridiculous name. And then you have a dependency, and then you...
We have a wish for vNext, so that is, this one is not enabled for default, but time will tell.
Yeah. So our case now is that we have this single VMM stamp, and we are a host service provider that is offering services across different countries in Europe. So we need to design VMM properly. So the first thing we'll do, of course, is to create a host group. And the primary data center is obviously located in
Copenhagen,
of course. So here I have a host group. And this tells you that, OK, these guys are structuring the host groups according to their physical locations. Brilliant. Now, let's go to the networking part. Logical networks. We will create the first one. So what I'll do here is to create the management network. Now, this is a logical network. And by management, it means the network VMM communicates with the Hyper-V hosts. Does it make sense? Yeah? So I'll name it management. And I also need to take some actions, as you can see. We have different kind of logical networks. We have one connected network, we have VLAN-based independent networks, and we also have private VLANs. Now, as a rule of thumb, and please note, for all the fabric-related networks, which means the network that you, as an administrator, is managing, use one connected network. Don't use VLAN-based independent networks. That's for your tenant VLANs, and I will show you why. So I'll add a site. And as you can see, we have one site already by the definition, which is Copenhagen. Uh, I would give it a name. So, we are now associating this logical network site with this specific host group. So it will only be available for Copenhagen.
One little detail is that we've seen some environments where everybody insists on tagging everything. And the majority of time where people tag the management network and is a nightmare from everything from deployment to bare metal deployment. So if you have a fight with the networking guys, try to win it so you can ensure that the at least the management part of the fabric is on untagged VLAN. Having that tagged, if you have to do bare metal deployment or PXE boot, is just a nightmare. So if possible, try to avoid tagged VLANs on the bare metal of the host.
It will simplify the management.
Yeah. Everything else is tagged per default, but the management network where the Hyper-V is domain joined, try to keep that on untagged network.
The next thing we'll do with this logical network site is to associate an IP pool. So no need for DHCP in your data center anymore. VMM will be able now to assign static IP configuration to each virtual network adapter it manages. So this is related to VM deployment when you create logical switch with virtual mix, as we will show you. So we basically are feeding VMM with knowledge. So we are associating this IP pool with the management network. We specify the starting, ending IP address. We can define the gateway, DNS, and so on. So this is basically what we have done now. One host group representing Copenhagen. We have a logical network for management with the Copenhagen site. And we also have an associated IP pool for Copenhagen. Now, it's not that impressive to see me click through this for all the other networks. So we will run a script now for the rest of it.
We also seen sometimes that there's an argument with most likely the firewall guys and networking guys where they insist to know that Hyper-V host has IP address 27. But if you have enough host, it doesn't matter what IP address it has, because if your DNS system is down, your host is down anyway. So try to extract the IP address as just a resource and either run DHCP on this one if you want to, or use the static IP addressing from VMM and don't care about the IP address on the hosts.
So to summarize what we just did, we created host group for each of our city. We have created logical networks for all the fabric related networks, as you can see, management, line migration, cluster, storaging, and also cloud network for network virtualization. Now, since we have the new location here, I can easily go to management and add a new site. Associated with the Paris host group. I can then create an IP pool linked to the same definition. And now have IP pools for the Paris site as well. Does this make sense to you, structuring it this way? Because this is important, because every mapping you create here will be important when the intelligent placement in VMM runs. So each and every time you do a VM deployment, either it's from the VMM console or it's triggered from the Azure pack through SPF, intelligent placement will run in the background and determine where this virtual machine can be placed. So we have seen people selecting, making all these networks available for all host groups, so they have no control where the virtual machines are going. So they start to troubleshoot VLANs, they start to troubleshoot everything in VMM, they have created a lot of dependencies, and there you go. So
sometimes we see the hosting of a service provider using customer IDs for the last host group. So if the customer has 50 or 60 dedicated blades, we'll make a host group for that. So instead of doing Copenhagen, we'll do customer XYZ. But if this is a shared environment, you'll probably just keep the host group to a minimum. So I'm having logical base per location.
So the last thing I will show you before we handle this over to Fleming is that we have something called VM networks in addition, just to make it a bit more complex. Now, the reason for this is basically everything we saw in Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V, support of NIC teaming, virtual network adaptering, and network virtualization. So in VMM, in order to connect a network to a virtual interface, no matter if it's on a team, on the host, or a virtual machine, we need the VM networks. So by using the one logical connected network, as I created, we create a one-to-many mapping here. So as I can show you, I will create management and associate it with the management logical network. So that was the basic of the Fabric environment. So we're going to switch over to our live environment now, where you, Fleming, will show something cool.
We have in our environment here a few hosts that is not running any workload right now. So this is a, well, it's not running anything that's working right now. If you don't use bare metal deployment, you will end up having to add the local, the logical switches yourself. If you use a bare metal deployment from end to end, it will domain join the host, create the logical switches, and make it ready for production. But it takes about an hour and a half to deploy a host, so we will have to do this by hand instead of having to wait all day. So basically, we have a newly deployed Hyper-V host, and from a networking perspective, it's just been domain joined on one NIC. And we don't have any Hyper-V networking at all. The first issue we are seeing a lot of places is that people started out with Windows Server 2012, upgraded to R2, and it's running and everything is fine. And then they add VMM and they find out that the networking stuff should be done from VMM. So if you have deployed a Hyper-V host, created a team in Hyper-V, you need to redo it. A team needs to be created from VMM. It always needs to be created from VMM if you have to lose logical networks. So no teaming, no nothing. So this one is just a default deployment. So if you take our host, create a new logical switch. Put it on a production switch. And we can take the two network cards we have in the machine. So what VMM will do in a bit, it will upload a networking script to the host. It will create a team. And it will use a static IP address that is already on the networking.
Just delete that, Nick Fleming, and go back to the logical switch. So if you click on the uplink port profile, you can see that we have created different uplink profiles, which is a boundary for each of the physical adapters. Which means we will ensure that this configuration only applies for the Copenhagen host group.
Yeah. So we'll try again. And it's back as it should be. And we had a look before with the additional networking, so we'll do the cluster. This will create our network for cluster communication, and it will assign an IP address from the pool that Christian created. And we'll do the same for live migration. the classification on port profiles sets quality of service on the networking card, so we can ensure that even while we're only using the two physical network cards, we won't do a live migration that will kill the production workload. So right now it's copying the script to the Hyper-V host. It's creating the networking chain and the first management adapter. And it should have enabled teaming. We have a refresh here. Not yet, it's not there now. So it's created the production switch, and it will be applying the management, the network for cluster and live migration. A little bit. This usually takes a few minutes. So this will assign an IP address for our pool for the live migration and for the cluster network. So we don't care what the IP address is. We just need to ensure that it has an IP address and it can communicate with the rest of the host in the cluster. It loses connection twice normally when you do this, and the first time, a few times, you think, oh, now I have to drive to the data center and fix it. So it created a switch, it created a team, and now it's creating the logical network for the clustering and for the live migration. And this one is assigning the IP addresses for us, so we don't have to do anything manual, we don't have to maintain anything. So even while we have tools for managing the IP address, we usually don't care. If you go back to VMM, it says it's done. And if you have a look at the host, we've now created the networking and we're ready to apply a logical network for the logical network card for the VM workload. There's some designs on the VMM stuff where we talk about one versus two logical switches. I'm personally a favor of using one logical switch. Take the networking cards, put them in one stack, and use quality of service to ensure that this is not giving you trouble. If you have to use multiple logical switches, you need multiple networking cards. So I think it's easier and less complex to do this. Sometimes, for policy reasons, you have to keep DMC or some customer workloads on a dedicated logical switch, so you need to have enough networking cards to do that.
So one important thing as well, in this example, we are using a complete converged fabric, which means everything runs through the Hyper-V switch on the host. So this will effectively disable RSS and enable VMQ. So if you have specific requirements for throughput when it comes to live migration, you would perhaps have that on a dedicated team. But again, that's one of the downside of VMM, we are not able to configure that kind of configuration. So at least you're aware of that.
Yeah. We're still seeing deployments where you use SMB for storage, where you keep the networking cards for SMB traffic outside of a logical switch for performance reasons.
Are there any questions to this configuration so far? It all makes sense? Yes? Sorry, can you repeat?
Yeah, you can do that. If you
can you also configure it with VMM?
So the question is, can you configure the SMB network cards from VMM as well? On the host side, you can deploy the VNX for SMB and use the right classification. But when it comes to multi-channel, you would normally have to do some configuration outside of VMM in order to get that properly working.
If you want to use multi-channel and you want to use RSS, you need to do the configuration outside of VMM. If you have a small environment or test environment, it's not a problem to get to assign two networking cards for SMB, but you won't be able to move multi-channel without going through PowerShell and configuring that. So yes and no. For production, no. For testing and playing around, yes. Hopefully we'll see, we've seen some great improvements. We can provide scale-out file system servers from bare metal in VMM. So hopefully we'll see in the next version of VMM deeper integration to the fabric, so we don't have to go outside of VMM to do anything. That's one of our wishes for next version. So hopefully it will be there. Time will tell.
Yeah. So while we're at the subject, VMM can also provision scale-out file server clusters for you and manage it. So.
So we're seeing a move away from configuration manager doing the bare metal and deployment. So we're seeing that VMM will be the fabric provider and will be able to maintain majority of the fabric. But the storage today is not complete, but it's helping a lot.
Okay, so the last thing for this demo is to just explain a bit about the network virtualization. So the requirements, and it's kind of a tough discussion to have with your networking guys. They normally get a bit scared, to say the least. Yep. Don't virtualize my networks. But if you are a service provider and want to provide multi-tenancy and self-services, it's quite obvious that you can't interact with every network that needs some management or be created or deleted. So there's a good business case for the network virtualization stuff. So for VMM, for the requirement, we need another logical network. And as you can see here, we are basically telling that new VM networks can be created upon this physical network and be virtualized. So the only thing you have to ask your networking guys of is to get another VLAN or subnet so that the host can communicate on. Call it backup network or just so you get the network, because then you can enable this. So I remember.
Sorry, we've seen some issues where you use tag VLANs for the intermediary for the backend stuff. So I think this is one of the issues again where I would try to avoid tagged VLANs, at least yet. So.
Yeah, and we also have seen the VMQ issue affecting network virtualization.
If you're running Emulex, despite what they claimed with the new driver that was out a week ago, there's still issues with the VMQ. So if you're using Emulex, and basically also most of the Broadcom versions, disable VMQ if you want to have a stable environment for now. So if you see VMs losing connectivity during live migration and during cluster moves, it's most likely related to VMQ issues. And there's about a gazillion blog posts about VMQ and Emulex and Broadcom. Mellanox and Intel seems to be working a lot better right now.
And QLogic.
So when you go have a look at the networking cards, it matters what network card you're using. So if you're going to scale out, ensure that you have spent some time testing the networking drivers and the network cards.
Okay, so the logical network we are dedicating for network virtualization, as you can see, is associated with the Copenhagen host group. So PA stands for provider addresses. If we go to the uplink profile, you can see that the PA Copenhagen site is associated with this uplink profile that we have added to our logical switch for the Copenhagen hosts. And that's the only thing we need to do. So when we deploy a virtual machine that is using network virtualization onto one of these hosts, the host through the uplink profile, get access to the IP pool for the provider addresses and get an IP for the NVGRE network automatically. And that's quite cool. So just a summary for this demo. Host group structure should reflect locations. In each location, you can have different functions, like we have IaaS, disaster recovery, management, and other stuff. And the network design should also match the host group structure, so it makes sense. I don't know how many times I've been troubleshooting VMM environments where suddenly IP version 6 addresses make more sense than the name of the networks. So that's a tip, at least. Mm. Use VLAN-based independent network for VLANs, because then you can create a VM network that has a one-to-one mapping to each specific VLAN and subnet.
And also ensure that if you're using PVLANs, ensure that the networking stack you're using supports PVLANs. We've seen some implementations where they basically do a shadow VLAN, and even while you're supposed to be able to create 4,000 times 2 networks, you can only create 4,000 because it reuses the VLAN ID. So ensure that the networking stack you're using actually supports PVLANs.
Use availability sets for the management VMs on the dedicated management cluster, so you don't have everything in the same basket. That's important. And also, when we're dealing with scalability, use bare metal deployment and VW SUS for lifecycle management.
This also means that if a host is giving you some trouble, power it off and blow it away and deploy a new one. There's no reason to spend time on troubleshooting one host.
So it's easy to add more scale units. So we're going to jump into the next demo. We're going to abstract the fabric into the VMM clouds and see how it relates to the hosting plan in Azure. There are quite some options here. So you have many possibilities when it comes to the cloud configuration in VMM. So this is... Let me check. This is our configuration so far. So you can see that each cloud basically represents a different host group, right? So for the Copenhagen cloud, if we go to the properties, you can see that the resource we are using is the IaaS host group located within Copenhagen. So each and every workload that we deploy to this cloud will end up in this on this cluster. For the networks, we are exposing some tenant VLANs and also the cloud network. So the naming of the network dedicated for network virtualization is also important here, because the tenant will be able to see it in Azure Pack. They will see the mapping from the virtualized network to the provider address network. So this is the only thing we do. We also add other abstraction into the cloud, so port classification that we can use together with virtual machines on the VNix on this cloud is here as well. The same goes for storage, and we can also define the capacity. All of this will be abstracted into Azure Pack as well, as I will show you.
The capacity is normally used for internalized IT departments. For a hoster perspective, the more you use, the more you pay. So we are normally seeing the capacity being used only in internal IT departments and deployments where they are a cost center. On the hoster side, they want to give away as many resources as possible, as fast as possible.
We also have a cloud called Europe. And what's interesting here is that this cloud contains IaaS host group from all the countries to provide geo-redundancy. For the cloud services, we have a cloud that is basically abstracting all these countries. So as you can see, we can obviously create several clouds using the same host groups. And the same goes for the Azure Pack. We can have several hosting plans accessing the same VMM server, the same VMM cloud, different VMM cloud, but the same VMM server, and so on. So we are able to scale and create quite a mess if we'd like. So going back to the admin portal in Azure Pack, so this is the portal that you as an administrator is managing.
And this is a part that is normally not published to the internet. This is just because it's our little playground. So the admin stuff is normally kept behind the firewall on the inside of the network.
So I won't spend too much time explaining everything we see here. But basically, for the scope of this session, we are now accessing the Service Management API, basically the admin API. And this is where we have registered the service provider foundation endpoint. And please note that Azure Pack only supports one endpoint. So when you do the registration here, you basically communicate to SPF. And then you can add your management stamps. So this will be registered in SPF. So here you can see we have the VMM server that we've been working in. And you can see all the clouds we have in VMM is available here. Next, we can create hosting plans. And as you can see, if we dive into the Copenhagen hosting plan, it contains the virtual machine cloud resource provider. And if we dive into this one, we are connecting to our VMM management stamp, and we are using the Copenhagen cloud. So this means we are determining where the workload will be placed when subscribers are deploying into this. For the capacity, this will inherit the settings from the VMM cloud, so we are able to scope this at the plan level as well. So add only what you need to the cloud. In our case, we are representing physical locations. You could also have different clouds for each location, depending on the SLAs, for instance. You can also associate custom properties to gain better control. So our way to force, for example, the VM roles in Azure Pack to be highly available, we have created a custom property. When you're using disaster recovery together with Azure Site Recovery, the protection must be enabled at the cloud level. So the virtual machines that you want to protect need to be associated with the cloud. So, and also the last point here is important for you who are not able to use NVGRE at this time. If you want to use VLAN and expose that to your tenants, you can do that. However, this requires you to create a hosting plan for each tenant that should have its specified VLAN, unless you want the different tenants being able to see each the VLAN, each of the VLANs. So,
and you probably don't.
No.
One downside of using the VLANs is that you use the mapping that we have in the portal with NVGRE. So everything firewall and networking related has to be scripted out of band from VMM.
So the last demo.
Yep.
Let's see how everything interacts based on our configuration.
Which one?
This
one. So if we sign in as a user, not Christian here, we'll check another one.
You see that we have federated with Spotify?
Yeah, but I didn't get the Led Zeppelin stuff to work.
So now we are accessing the tenant portal. And as you can see, this is obviously exposed on the internet and available for our tenants.
Somebody made a crazy password. So this is a new user that hasn't done anything yet. So the first thing we're going to do is going to add a subscription for this user. And we're going to assign this user to the Copenhagen hosting plan. This can be password protected. This can be scoped so the user can't see it. So when you're creating the plan, we should be able to see in our little friend over here. It's creating a user role, and it's assigning the user role as tenant administrator. So this user can now access and administrator VMs from his own tenant. After this is done, we can create a virtual network. And this will go back to VMM, and it will create, in a second, create a VM subnet, it'll create a network name, and it'll create an IP pool. So this is being reflected in the VM networks. So we can see this network and we can see the IP addresses. So, and because we're using network virtualization, the networking addresses will not overlap. So this is just isolated network. And this is the stuff where we see the service provider normally having to do manual work, finding a VLAN, finding a subnet, assigning that to the customer. So this is usually a time saver. And after we're done, we can create a virtual machine. Let's do a VM room. Create a domain controller. And this is actually where we're seeing a lot of value add for the hosts today. Creating VM roles and creating services that are complete is a big value add for the service provider and also for the internal IT department. So if you have a development group and they require 5 VMs for something, we can put them in a role and they can just deploy them here without interaction from you. Just daisy easier one. Let's do a big one. If I can type in the same password twice, it will be easier. So this will basically talk to the VMM. It will deploy the VM from a service template, or a VM role, sorry, and it will create the domain, and it will create the domain controller. In about 5 or 7 minutes, we have the domain controller up and running. And again, this is an isolated network, so when the developers comes along, or the hoster, the customer comes along and created the HTTP server, we are not conflicting with anything else. So this is, at least what we're seeing for deployment, a great way to do development environments and pre-production. And so this will go into the VMM environment, and it will add a VM role, copy the template, copy in the scripts for doing the interaction in the VM, and it will create the domain, and hopefully within the next few minutes, it will have the domain controller up and running. And we can go back to our network here. And we can add rules. So we can go in and create internet access through the service provider, the provider address space. I'm not sure I can do this while it's actually deploying a VM. See if I'm allowed to do it.
Yeah, you should be.
But this will go in and give us the option when it's done to create a site-to-site VPN to the domain controller. It will also be able to give us a rule so we can go in and enable NAT from the public IP address from the network virtualization gate so we can access this environment from the outside. So this will give us a, when it's done, it will give us a connection string. And it'll give us an endpoint so we can create the site-to-site. And we give this to the Cisco guys or the Juniper guys, and they will be able to set up a site-to-site VPN connection from your on-prem installation to the service provider with little or no interaction from the networking team. So this is what you see, or the end user will see in the after you have get the fabric up and running and provided the network virtualization and set the VMM up correctly. What's this one? We have two of them open just to be confusing.
That one.
Yeah. Did you miss one? Oh, sorry. Yeah, so the tenant being created in VMM is a logical solution for the end user. So we can group the customers of the end user into each tenant, and we can give access to multiple administrator for the same tenant. We couldn't do that in the first version of Azure, but we can do that today. The tenant can use the UI, they can use PowerShell, they can use the APIs with REST and JSON to access and create VM. So we don't need to give them access to a portal, we just need to give them the credentials so they can access the APIs and do the same. So if they prefer to create VMs in their own service desk, we can just give them a API call, so we can create the VMs directly in SPF. And VMM creates availability sets, so when you create a VM role, we can ensure that they either stay together or keep apart to ensure that we're not breaking stuff. So if you deploy five VMs with the web server role, it will per default put them on different hosts. Questions?
Yes. Sorry, the question was if you can. Yeah, so the question is, can you rename the domain of the newly deployed domain controller? Yes, you can within the virtual machine,
yeah,
but not directly in the portal.
As soon as a VM role has been created by VMM, VMM loses control of the VM. We don't have any after-production access to the VM. So if a customer wants to go in and modify a role, they can do it themselves, or you can log on to the VM and do it. So there's no version 1.01 of the domain controller that can change the name or anything else. We are currently lacking the ability to interact with the VM after it's been created, without using third-party tools.
Yes?
They were mapped to different VLANs
by VMM.
You can see if you can show it here. So when we created the logical switch, we added the two physical network cards to the. Where are we? Sorry. So we have the physical host, take this one example. We have two physical network cards. And when we create a logical switch, we create a free virtual network cards. So So the management here is running on the on-tack VLAN on management. The live migration is running on VLAN tagged 11, and the cluster is running on VLAN 10. So we're not, we are keeping them apart on a VLAN level, just to ensure that, well, it's isolated. This virtual switch in this environment is connected to two physical interfaces. Yeah, but you can add as many as you want. So that's mainly for performance and failover. So if you have two 10 gigabit network cards, you will add them to the switch, and then you would add the virtual VLANs on top of that. Yes, the default load balancing algorithm is
dynamic.
Dynamic, so it will it will spread the load per default. You can go in and change it if you want to, but we recommend that you don't change it from Hyper-V. So if you look at the the networking teaming that we've done on the server used for the testing, it created this team and it'll do the dynamic load balancing here. So it will, per default, create a load balancing algorithm for you. And we've seen some incidents of some customers where they didn't have funding for multiple 10G, so they had 10 gigabit for primary and 1 gig for failover. And then we had to go in and ensure that the teaming was set to failover. Otherwise, you could end up in a situation where you actually went everything through a 1 gig interface. In theory, it should take the fastest interface, but in reality, sometimes it doesn't. So if you don't have 10G or multiple interfaces, you can go in manually after and set the load balancing algorithm. That's correct. Yeah, in Hyper-V 2008, we had dedicated networks for everything. So basically, before you were doing anything, you used 6 networking cards just to keep Hyper-V up and running. So that's gone with 2012 and 2012 R2. So if there's no more questions, I think we have this one. We'll do some blowing things up tomorrow, doing some disaster recovery and trying to see if we can keep this fabric up and running after we kill some VMs.
Oops.
And I think there's one more. Please fill out the evaluation. If for nothing else, there will be some donations for charity. Thank you for your time, and hopefully you'll enjoy the rest of the week.
Thanks.